Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very first day of March, Anno Domini 2025, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you, just for a change, news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. So Microsoft is shutting down Skype, the internet-based phone and video service that was once the dominant way of staying connected in the mid-2000s. From now on, if you want to connect with people like you did with Skype, you'll use Teams, and you'll like it. Starting in May, Skype will, and I quote, no longer be available. That's in May. Microsoft told users that their login information can be used on Teams free tier in the, again, and I quote, coming days. Which, knowing Microsoft, could be any time between now and the heat death of the universe. It's not clear how many people this will impact. Most recent numbers Microsoft shared were in 2023 when it said it had more than 36 million users, which is a long way from Skype's peak of 300 million users. Skype's shutdown comes 14 years after Microsoft bought the service for $8.5 billion with a B dollars in cash, marking the company's largest ever acquisition at that time. Microsoft integrated the service into its other products, such as Office and its ill-fated mobile operating system, Windows Phone. Remember Windows Phone?
Wince.
Not fondly.
I like Wince.
Wince. Skype's popularity has faded in recent years, despite a pandemic bounce that lifted other competing products, including Zoom, Google Meet, and Cisco WebEx. Skype has also faced increased competition over the last decade and a half from apps like Apple's FaceTime and Meta's WhatsApp. Plus, Microsoft has been investing heavily in Teams, which offers many of the same services. Skype launched in 2003 in Estonia and quickly caught on as a way to make free phone calls worldwide, a notable perk considering international calling on traditional phones used to be expensive. The service quickly became popular, leading eBay to buy it in 2005 for $2.6 billion. However, the partnership did not work out, and eBay sold its 65% stake in Skype to an investor group for $1.9 billion in 2009 before Microsoft bought it in 2011. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Skype is dead. Long live Teams. And your choices are no. Well, that's annoying.
Nice breath control.
Thank you very much. Haven't used Skype in a while. Never used Skype. And wait, you can talk to people over the internet? So far, we have 31 votes. And never used Skype is in the lead, which explains why Microsoft is selling it, followed by I haven't used Skype in a while, which is also explanatory as to why Microsoft is selling it. So anyway, you can vote in the polls at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, you can give us a call here to talk about that or dang near anything else involving computers or computer-adjacent devices. At 585-966-JAZZ, it's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
Yeah, it was always so surprising to me that Skype was the dominant video chat in the industry just before the pandemic, and suddenly Zoom came out of nowhere.
So nowhere.
Microsoft really dropped the ball on that. One of the biggest problems, I think, is that Microsoft required you to create an account, where Zoom didn't. You click a button and you're in the chat.
Right.
average people have trouble making accounts.
It's very true. Very true. We've seen people have trouble doing the Element accounts for our...
Or setting it up and then forget what username and password they use. Yep.
Well, exactly.
And then the very early days of Skype, your username had nothing to do with an email address, which I hate the fact that most companies use an email address as your username because it makes it hard to change your email address, which is hard to do anyway because companies use your email address.
Mm-hmm. But from the point of view of the company, the email address will always be unique.
Yep.
They don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
So that's kind of nice. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Robin from Rochester, New York. What's up, Robin?
Hi, guys. My question, several days ago, I borrowed my daughter-in-law's camera and to make a Zoom conference, and she plugged it in the front of the computer. We unplugged it. I gave it back to her. And since then, I'm not able to watch any DVDs. And then in addition to that, I'm not one to try and push things, but I got crazy and was pushing all kinds of stuff on this computer. And now every thing on my laptop, the background, has a little circle with a check on it, except one folder.
Sounds like three different things happened. Mm-hmm. The last one is that OneDrive got installed. Microsoft has been really big on pushing OneDrive. Which
I don't know what that is.
It's their cloud service that syncs all of your files to Microsoft's cloud. So each check mark means that file is synced.
Yep.
And what happens is you have to buy more storage to fit all your stuff. And without you realizing what happens, they have changed the folder path. So now instead of your data being in your documents folder, it's in the OneDrive documents folder. We've had a lot of people call into the shop who suddenly they can't find their files or programs quit working because everything changed when OneDrive got installed without their knowledge. It was hidden in one of those dialog boxes that everyone ignores. So there are ways to turn off OneDrive and delete it from your system, but it doesn't put things back where it came from.
Yeah,
which is tough.
Dangerous.
Yeah. The video playing issue, it sounds like the computer is expecting to play video from that video camera and doesn't know it's not there anymore. I'm trying to find in Windows how you change your video input source.
I was going
to
say, they might have, when they plugged in that camera, might have made that the default.
Yeah.
And that's why it's relying on that and not your other devices.
So somewhere in the Windows settings is a default video source so that it will play video internal to the computer instead of looking for that external camera.
So how do I do that?
I would open settings.
Okay, where do I... Is that under the little blue square? Or is that
yes,
search?
the Windows menu.
Have you got do you know if you have Windows 10 or 11?
11.
Okay. So you should be able to open that little square.
Okay, under Start.
Right.
Okay.
And you should see on the left either a little gear icon or the word Settings.
Okay, I have the word Settings.
Okay, click on that.
Right or left click?
Left click, the regular click.
Okay. Now it says a whole bunch of stuff.
Right. And on the left are a series of words. If you look down, you may have to scroll down. You should see display.
Display, hang on. I have home, system, Bluetooth, and devices. Network and internet, personal...
Oh, sorry, system. I beg your pardon. I skipped a step.
Oh, system?
System, then display.
Okay. Okay, here's display. Click on display?
Yeah.
All right. Now I have brightness and color, scale and layout, related settings, related support, get help, give feedback.
Hmm.
And then it's, oh, there's under brightness and color, I have night light, color profile, and HDR.
Yeah, you don't want to change any of those. Leave it the way it is.
And then we have scale, display resolution, display orientation, multiple displays, advanced display graphics, and then related support.
Yeah. When you try to play a DVD, do you get an error message?
I get nothing.
Yeah, there's a different setting in settings called apps. And under apps, there's video playback.
Okay, should I click on apps?
Yes. And then you want to find video playback.
Okay, hang on a second. Okay, video playback.
And then there should be an option there for DVDs.
Hang on.
And you can tell it to use the DVD app software.
The preview shows what video will look like with your current settings. Process video. Save network bandwidth. HDR display. Power. Help with video playback.
And you're under apps.
Yeah, let me...
It should let you pick which application to use for video playback.
Under apps, it says installed apps, advanced apps settings, default apps, offline maps, apps for websites, video playback.
There it is, video playback.
Okay, click on that.
Yep.
Okay, and then what?
There should be a setting for the DVD player or for DVDs.
I've got that HDR display, power, help with video playback.
There should be one that says DVDs, or it might say MPEG video.
Could be the HDR.
High dynamic resolution. That's the display option, not an app option. I'm not sure you're in the right place.
Well, you said to click on apps, APPS.
Right, in settings. And then under video playback options. I'm trying to find I'm trying to find a picture of it. There's a way to go to devices and printers and set the DVD player as the default device. I don't think that's it either. Nobody here has Windows, so we're trying to find a picture of the screen to figure out what's going on.
I'll ask a crazy question. Why don't you guys have Windows?
That's a very good question. Actually, Dave has Windows, but they're all
they're running the radio station.
Machines running the radio station.
I've got Mac, and Nick has Linux, and we just like it better. It has much fewer troubles than Windows.
Oh.
And this is Windows 10.
11.
No, I'm running Windows 10 on my system.
Oh, sorry.
DVD.
It used to be that Dave had a Windows machine, but then he is running the board now, so he doesn't have a separate computer of his own set up.
Right. I've got three others that I'm using to run this whole radio station,
right,
along with the phones.
Right. And somehow he just doesn't think he has time to sit at a laptop as well.
And talk on the radio.
Okay, this may be a problem you're going to have to take to somebody. I'm sure it's a simple fix, but somebody's got to be actually looking at your computer to see it. Is this a laptop?
No, it's a regular computer.
Okay, you're going to either have to take it to somebody or have somebody come to your home.
So here's one that says use Windows Media Player to play DVDs. And that's under advanced options.
Oh, you know what?
What?
How do you get there? If you search for default apps
under Google?
No. At the
settings window.
The settings window.
Where do I find that?
You were there, so if you go back,
setting?
Yeah, if you go back to settings.
Okay, hang on a minute. Let me get out of this thing. And that's a little blue square. Okay, settings.
Now search for default apps. No, I think you've sent it one back too far.
No results for default settings.
All right, yeah.
Default apps.
Hang on a minute. Hang on.
So if you start typing default in the search bar.
Change the default settings for your camera. I don't have a camera. I gave it back.
Well, let's go in there and see what it looks like.
Change the default. You mean that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Add a network camera. Connected cameras. No cameras found. Related settings. Camera privacy settings. Get help. Give feedback.
And that's not it either. We're looking for the default media app.
Yeah. So, okay. So, again, back out of all of that. And just next to start, there should be a little search area.
Yeah.
Type default into there.
Well, when I clicked on it, it says play CDs or other media automatically, device manager, DVD, computer management. And what do you want me to type in search?
In search, I want you to type default.
Oh, default. D-E-F-A-U-L-T. And then...
What came up?
I haven't hit the button yet.
Don't hit the button. Let it suggest things for you.
Oh,
it should be. There should be a list of things above it that suggest...
On the left-hand side.
Yeah, that suggest possible applications that start with default.
It says default apps.
There you go. That's the one.
Okay, click on that one.
Please.
Okay, and we have a whole bunch of stuff here. Adobe Acrobat, APP Installer.
You're looking for DVD playback.
Scroll down.
DEV Home. The only thing I got in the D's is desktop. Sticker, editor, Centennial, and DEV home preview.
All right, scroll down to video.
Or M for media.
Could be M for media.
Okay, under the M's, oh, media player?
Yes.
I have mail and calendar accounts, manage mobile devices, maps, media player.
That's the one.
Media player.
Okay. Left click.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Yep. Now we have, what do you want me to hit?
DVDs. There should be one for CDs, one for DVDs, one for MP3s.
All I've got are media players. Oh, here's a media player.
So you're trying to set media player as the default player for DVD media.
I don't know what that means in English.
Find DVDs in that list and set it to the Windows media player.
What? Can you read me the list?
Oh, yeah. Hang on. Let me go to the top. media player, and then there's a 3G2 file, 3GP file, 3GP2 file, 3GPP, AAC file, AC3, ADT, ADTS, AMR, ASF, AVI,
Just scroll down and see if there's one that says MPEG.
MP.
So you're all in audio format, so we're looking for the video format.
MP.
Might be MPEG-2.
MP. Windows. Media. Media. A lot of medias. Media player, media player. It says MS Play to Audio, MS Windows Music.
Okay, hold on a second. Up in the section where you were reading all those other ones, we're not talking about it starts with MPG. We're talking about it ends with MPG in that section.
Is there a search box at the top of that list, maybe?
Hang on, let me get to the top here. The only thing I have is, excuse me, find a setting, and then at the top it says apps, default apps, media player, set default file types or link types, 0.3G2.
Now we're trying to set the default media type for MPEG-2 files.
Yeah, you had that whole list you were reading us. What is the first one on that list?
3G2 file.
Yeah, that's a cell phone video.
Right, so we want you to go down that list until you get to the M's and
maybe D for DVD, too.
Maybe D for DVD.
Instead of the word media player, look under that, like for...
Yes.
No. In the list where you're at, the 3GPP and that list, scroll down in that list till you get to D and see if there's DVD.
Well, you're looking for a replacement for the 3GPP type part.
Okay, so I have a DIVX file. That's the only Ds.
Oh, yeah, hold on.
That's an older... Mm-hmm. Video format. So try to keep going down until you get to the M's and see if MPEG-2 is in there.
FLAC. MIV, M2T, M2T5S, M2V, M3U, M4A, M4R. M4V. What am I looking for again?
MPEG.
Or just MPG. One of those two.
Okay, I have MP3.
Nope. Keep going.
MP2.
Nope.
MP3. MP4. MP4V. MPA. MPE. MPEG.
There it is.
There it is.
Okay, left click.
Yep. Is there a checkbox next to that?
I have... I clicked on it. I have an arrow going to the right. And then it's... when I left clicked on it, it says select a default app for .mpeg files. Media player... VLC Media Player, Movies and TV, Windows Media Player Legacy, more options, Adobe.
I think Media Player is the one you want.
I think so.
Okay, left click?
Yeah.
It's not doing anything.
Well, it just selected it.
Yeah, but it's not, it says, and at the bottom, right, it says set default.
Yes, click set default. Yeah, and then try playing a DVD. We gotta go. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you because it is with your support that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody get up.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And after that a strike from YouTube.
Yeah.
We are Soundbite, and we have Gary from, and I'm jealous to say this, Daytona Beach, Florida, on the line. What's up, Gary? I got family down in Daytona Beach, and I don't visit them often enough. What's the weather like down there?
Oh, it's terrible. It's 80 degrees, and it's bike week.
Oh, man. Oh, it's bike week.
Bike week. After the Daytona 500 last week, one of the cars thought it was an airplane.
Yeah, right.
Daytona's gotten so crowded, though, when you go down there for bike week. I mean, they're parking up on the sidewalks because, there's so many folks that come down there. It's a no-helmet state, so you can ride all around and gorgeous weather.
All right, so what's up?
Tell us.
USB-C ports. Now, I'm a MacBook Air user, and I've noticed I'm plugging stuff in and out of the USB-C ports a lot. And some devices work in one port, but they don't work in the other port. So I have two questions. One is, do the USB-C ports on the MacBook really last 10,000 insert and removal cycles like the USB-C spec says they're supposed to? And secondly, is there a difference between the USB-C ports on the MacBook Air? I think I saw something online that one of them is a standard USB-C port, and the other one is this digital firmware update port that has some other features to it.
Well, the insertion count is an average of 10,000 insertions. So one will last for 10, and the other will last for 10 million. So the average. So, but in general, the ports are the same, but if you're doing a DFU restore, the digital firmware update, it has to be in one port or the other. But in terms of USB functions, they should be the same, and in Thunderbolt functions are the same. On some of the desktops, the Mac Mini and the iMac, there can be Thunderbolt-only ports and USB-only ports.
Yeah, what are
USB,
you running?
Yeah, on the MacBook Air, they're the same.
Oh, did he say MacBook Air?
Yeah. But on the iMac, some of them can be USB only and the others can be Thunderbolt. Thunderbolt includes USB. It's, Thunderbolt's one of the super sets of everything. But the MacBook Air, they're all just standard USB.
The reason for this question is that I tried plugging in an expansion port. It turns out it's a Dell 6000 expansion port that does monitors and USB-A and things like that. And it works in one port of my MacBook Air, but it doesn't work in the other. And the one port that it does work in is the DFU port.
There is
some extra logic attached to it.
It may be providing more power. Does the does your expansion hub have its own power cord?
Yes, it does.
And are you plugging it in?
Yep. All 130 watts.
Yeah, it may be that one of the ports, I'm trying to find it here, one of the ports on the Mac may have more power. Because that used to be the issue with CD drives. A lot of external CD drives would have two USB-As on them, so it could pull enough power off of USB. But Apple's only had one because one of their ports gave it more power. What year MacBook Air is it? Do you know offhand?
It's the last of the Intels, so this is an early 2020.
2020. Let's see what it says for connections. Thunderbolt 3, just it doesn't say any difference. USB 3.1 Gen 2, doesn't give any difference through power. The computer will take power in on the Thunderbolt port as well, up to 30 watts power in.
I think if you do a search on the digital firmware update you'll find a page from Apple that tells you that, yeah, one of the ports is a DFU port, and because one is a DFU and the other one isn't, there's some, has to be some different logic attached to them. But
it's tied to the to the T2 chip, where the other one may not be. So the security chip in the computer. But my guess is that one could provide more power than the other one, although I haven't run into that lately, and I'm trying to find a specification that may say that for me.
I was going to ask, you know, since you guys take in a lot of Macs in your shop, are you seeing burned out USB ports, USB-C ports on the MacBooks?
Usually liquid is involved. A spill on the desk that gets wicked into the computer. We just had one the other day that all four of the ports were burned out, two on each side, on a MacBook Pro that had the four ports.
But that's
I have a separate. Well, I'm kind of asking this because it's applicable basically to any machine that's got USB-C ports, and the DFU is unique to Mac, but the lifetime of the USB-C ports applies to everybody. A different question about MacBooks. Do you guys have or know about a utility that can keep track of the rewrite cycles or the lifetime of the SSD? Since on the MacBook Airs, the SSD is integral with the logic board, there isn't any way to change the storage device if something happens to go wonky with it, so you have to replace the whole board.
Yeah, pretty much all the computers are like that now. Am I running it on this computer? There's a couple of disk utilities I've played with in the past. Disk Drill, that's one of them. I'll post a link to that from Clever Files. It also has a recovery option built into it. But it will dig deep into the smart data and display a lot of extra parameters about the connected drives.
Well, but you can just, I mean, about this Mac tells you about the state of the drive on if it's got smart technology.
Verified or not verified.
And verified means it's healthy.
Right. But doesn't tell you how healthy, I guess.
Oh, yeah, right.
So every drive has a certain number of bad blocks that it's allowed before it considers itself unhealthy.
Yeah, you look at system report and it doesn't tell you anything.
Yeah, that's the drive health is in disk utility.
Oh, okay. I haven't poked there. Last question is, if I decide to part with this MacBook and I want to completely erase the SSD, how do I make sure that all my data is really gone before the next owner takes it?
The shorter answer is you don't. The way SSDs work, it randomly writes data across the drive. So even if you try to write, if you do an erase and reinstall the OS, some data could be left over in places. Because every time you write data to an SSD cell, it wears that cell out. So SSDs do something called wear leveling, where when it writes data, it writes to cells all over the disk without necessarily erasing the last cell. So it doesn't have a zero, write zeros to every cell option like spinning drives do.
And most people, you know, they buy a used computer. They're not going to spend the time and effort to now go and research, might have been on this driveway?
You'd have to do
hard drive.
Yeah.
They've got to be pretty hard up. Most of the folks are, I got this new computer. Even if it's used, I want to get my stuff on it and get it up and running. So I think it's, you know, some folks just get a little too over paranoid and don't have the tools anyways to recover half the stuff if you've gone ahead and erased it properly.
And a lot of that's is handled by the drive controller.
Yep.
So the OS says erase this file, and the drive controller says okay, and just marks that space free. It doesn't actually write zeros to each cell on the drive.
Right.
Well, I think won't Derek's It's an Intel Mac, so Derek's booting Nuke?
It has to be able to boot a UEFI computer. I don't know if Derek's can do that. And I don't know if Derek will do it on an SSD, just a spinning drive. Let's take a look. So there's a program called Derek's Boot and Nuke, DBAN, that will erase drives. Let's see. Ah, the free version won't secure erase an SSD, but the pay version will. So I can post this link as well. But in most cases, erasing the drive and reinstalling the OS is enough unless you're worried about trade secrets, and then physically destroy the drive is about the only way to be really sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way that I've done it in the past is I use a bootable USB thumb drive running Puppy Linux. It's a version of Linux. It's a very lightweight version of Linux. And Linux has a command called DD, which you can use to completely zero out the hard drive. Fills the entire hard drive with zeros.
Yeah, reinstalling a totally different operating system will probably do a good job of scrambling whatever is on the SSD.
Well, and then there's that. I mean, I have a MacBook Air that I'm going to be putting, no, MacBook Pro that I'm going to be putting Linux on. And when I do, it will reformat the drive from HF something something.
APFS now.
APFS, HPFS to EXT3 or 4, 4 probably I'll use. And that will completely erase everything on the drive because it's going to reformat it to an entirely different format on the operating on the drive.
And the Mac also supports DD, so you could, by booting a different computer or different boot volume, you can do a DD on the internal volume. Even booting the recovery volume, you can boot internet recovery. You can boot the Mac over the internet.
Yeah.
Apple has their internet recovery, so it's a bootable OS. So even if there's no OS at all on your Mac, you can boot over the internet and install a clean OS. And one of the options you get in internet recovery is a terminal. So you can play with it there.
Super. All right, guys, thank you very much. This was very helpful.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks.
I'll send you a can of sunshine.
Please.
Yeah.
Two. Enjoy.
All righty. Goodbye.
We went to visit, last time I went to visit family down in Daytona, it was not the time for the Daytona 500,
mm-hmm.
but there were speakers playing the sound of a race, so yep. You could hear the cars going around.
I heard an interesting annoyance from Neil Tyson, who went to a Daytona race, and they rig the speakers so that you don't hear the Doppler shift.
Right, right.
Which
it sounded wrong.
That's the only thing I went to the race for, is I want to hear the Doppler shift. Yeah. But they modify their speakers so you just hear the single roar. Maybe it was just that one game race he was at.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave. Nope. Our Dave is having trouble getting up in the chair. He's forgotten which end he sits on, apparently. Well, our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, I'm doing okay in my chair, but I got a couple little questions here.
Sure.
A long time ago, I was using POP for my email.
Yeah.
And it was I was using Gmail. And I switched over to IMAP like several years ago. I ended up with two sent folders. One was sent and the other was labeled sent mail.
Yeah.
And I thought, hey, it would be great to clean this up, right? So I thought I moved all the things into one folder, which I thought was the right folder, and deleted the other one.
Okay.
Now, in my sent folder, every time I send something, if I use Thunderbird to send an email, it shows up, I get two copies in my sent mail folder instead of one.
Hmm.
which isn't the end of the world, but being, you know, type A and all that.
Right.
There might be a way in the Thunderbird settings to pick which sent folder you mean.
Well, I didn't see anything when I was doing this, and the one folder's gone now. And I did notice if you go to any individual folder, you can click and find settings for that folder, yep. And it's got the web address for that, and I don't dare touch that.
See
if I can fix it.
It's possible that one of the sent folders is on Google and the other one is on your computer.
Well, So I'm reading the actual Mozilla reply, and they say what occurs is both of these providers, they're talking about both Hotmail and Google do this. And what happens is both of those providers and Thunderbird all make a copy of the email to go into the send folder, which results in two copies being saved. Neither Google nor Hotmail gives you the option of disabling their copy, the only alternative is to disable the Thunderbird copy. So if you go into account settings, copies and folders, change it not to save a copy.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Now, the drawback there is that if you BCC people, Google doesn't save a copy. It doesn't save the BCC information on the sent mail. So if you were to look in there, okay. You would see only undisclosed recipients. So if retaining that information is important, then you should allow Thunderbird to keep making copies. But if...
Nope.
Yeah, if okay. that's not important, tell Thunderbird, okay. stop making copies. And then you'll only get one copy, which is from Gmail.
Right. Okay, I can do that. My other little one, I use Bitwarden, and I have it installed on my machine here, and also the place where I do my nonprofit work. I installed Thunderbird there, and I created installed Bitwarden there, and I created an account for the nonprofit. Now, the trick is I signed in under my own credentials one time, and I've signed out, but now if I have to go to sign back in, it shows my personal name as well as the nonprofit name as a possible people that might sign in, if they left it in somewhere.
Autofill.
And I've tried to remove my personal name from that sign-in menu where you actually go to sign in to Bitwarden.
Are you saying you see it? Do you see it as a drop down in the?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the actual username, right?
So Steve is right. That's
autofill.
Autofill.
It's trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
You've logged in as these two people before, so I'm going to let you pick which one you want to use now.
Right. So somewhere when you logged in, you said yes, save this information.
That may be on by default in the main settings.
Right.
So if you go into settings under autofill, you can remove the items you want autofilled.
I thought that only applied to things when you're trying to sign into some website.
Nope.
It was autofill for that. Oh. All right. I'll go look at that one again.
Yep.
I'm done.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Yep.
Bye-bye. All right, we've been in Canandaigua, and we've been in Daytona Beach.
Yep.
We've been in Rochester. I prefer living in Rochester, but today...
The weather would be nice down in Daytona, 80 degrees.
80 degrees. Of course, Gary could be lying just to make us feel bad.
Probably.
I'm hoping he is, but he's probably not.
No.
All right. I will read another news. Are we got time? Yeah, we
can. Yeah, according to Google, it's only 71.
Yeah.
Where's your weather spotter?
Right. Apple's newest iPhone comes... This is various Apple news items. Apple's newest iPhone comes with a component many years in the making, the C1 modem. The idea of a new modem may not sound very exciting on the surface, but while there are cost benefits to ditching Qualcomm, there are also user-facing improvements like improved battery life, which we could all use, and more responsive data when you're facing network congestion. Oh, and it's thinner, which is Apple's raison d'etre. Adobe announced on Tuesday it's bringing Photoshop to mobile, starting with iOS. It plans to launch a Photoshop for Android app later this year. With the new Photoshop for iPhone app, users can access both free and paid features, assuming you have paid. You don't just get to use them. The app offers a similar set of editing tools as the desktop version, including layering and masking, but optimized for use on mobile screens. Photoshop for iPhone also integrates the Photoshop on the web for a fee. For users who want access to the app's premium features and Photoshop on the web, Adobe launched an $8 monthly subscription plan. All current Photoshop paid plans already include access to Photoshop on mobile. Two different exploits for an unpatched Parallels desktop privilege elevation vulnerability have been publicly disclosed, allowing users to gain root access on impacted Mac devices. Parallels desktop is a virtualization software that allows Mac users to run Windows, Linux, and other operating systems if you can find one alongside Mac OS. It is very popular among developers, businesses, and casual users who need Windows applications on their Macs without rebooting. Security researcher Mickey Jin published the exploits last week, demonstrating a bypass of the vendor's fixes for a privileged elevation flaw fixed in September. Jin says he released the exploits for the zero-day patch bypass after the developer allegedly left it unfixed for over 7 months. Microsoft released its Copilot AI Assistant as an application for Mac OS because everybody on Mac has been clamoring for Copilot. The app is available for download for free from the Mac App Store right now. I'm sure millions of Apple fanboys will flock to a Microsoft AI. So, do you even AI, bro? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415. Yeah, it's not enough that you have your own AI. You've got to have everybody else's AI, too. I just think that's probably not going to be the number one item on the Mac store.
It has a 3.9 out of 5 rating from the user RHHDFJFJFJGIFJFJFJF.
Oh, yeah, good old RHHDFJFJF. Sure, we all know him.
It's got a 1-star rating from the user Microsoft Sucks. With 4 S's.
Okay.
So that gives him an average of 3.9.
Yeah. Oops. All right.
Oh, yeah. You have to be 12 years old or older to use it.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, how are they going to check for that?
Right. Well, that's a whole big mess.
That is a huge mess and has been a huge mess and will remain a huge mess.
And it's getting huger.
Right.
The entire country of Australia has banned social media for children under 16. How do they tell?
Well, yeah, because the kids are, you know, all over the world are running up charges on people's credit cards and everything else. You know, you see these TikTok videos where the kid is, running up $2,000-$3,000 on the parents' credit cards because, you know, oh, they got it and they don't know, you know. They sit there and say, how old are you? And they say 18. And some of these kids, yeah, they probably sound like it. But buying all this lavish stuff for themselves.
Well, a lot of these kids, they don't understand the value of a dollar, right? They don't get it. Yeah. They're too young to understand that.
Well, they just realize, oh, wait a minute. I can give you this number, and all of a sudden you're sending me the stuff for free? That's the way they look at it. Because
right.
Not that, you know, their parents are going to now be responsible for, you know, that item and depending on the price tag on that.
There was a proposal in Britain for you to go to a bar and show them your physical ID. They would verify your age and then somehow tell the government that you were old enough to go to adult websites. That didn't work out, and they've abandoned those plans. But they haven't stopped the legislation requiring age verification.
Right.
Well, you're smart. You'll figure out how to do it.
Well, and the other problem is there's no... I mean, I'm not a big fan of a government universal ID. problem is there isn't one.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security doesn't work because that's just a series of numbers.
Yep.
And they're easily spoofed. So the real problem is, how do you handle that? Anyway, that's a debate for another time, because this time is just about done. The first hour of this show is now in the history books, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. Another hour of Dave Enright, another hour of Steve Ray, another hour of me, Nick Francesco, and another hour of you, but only if you give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a few minutes with the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Don't go too far, because we certainly won't.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. And to celebrate that, we have Mark from Greece on the line. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
Hey, guys. You know your first caller with the problem playing the DVDs?
Yes.
In the computer? The easiest fix probably would have been to have her put a disk in the drive, and then once it was in, you'll get an option in, say, computer. You right-click on the drive. It'll show an autoplay.
Yeah.
And you can just say, you can choose what to do default, you know, with the autoplay.
And that's a good thought.
Yeah. Because I think that would have been easier for her.
Probably. Thank you. Good thought, Mark. Thanks.
Yeah, the autoplay option. You could also... you could go into the device manager. There's also, if you go from category view to the other view, the icon view, you can view autoplay there also.
Right. Thank you.
Yep. So I just wanted, in case anybody has that problem in the future, that's another easy way to go about it.
That's good thinking. Thank you.
You got it.
All right. Have fun.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people, so when you put a disc in, it pops up and says, what do you want to do with this disc? And they will either, you know, open to view the files or open it in my media player. Don't ask me again is what they usually hit.
Well, the other thing,
so then
though,
when they put the next one in, it doesn't ask them again, like they said, and they don't know what to do with it.
The other problem is, too, a lot of the newer computers don't come with DVD drives anymore.
Well, that's true.
I mean... I haven't seen one, a new one, in laptops, forget it. You know, it's all USB.
Yep.
And everything is downloaded. You want the drivers or the programs or anything else, it's all downloaded from the internet now.
And you want movies and stuff like that, you buy them on whatever, Google, whatever.
Streaming, yeah.
Whatever service you're using, yeah.
Sony just announced that they're going to stop making blank DVDs, Blu-rays. DVDs are already gone, but blank right. Blu-rays, and other companies still are. Apple stopped including optical drives in 2012, and just a few months ago, they discontinued their own external SuperDrive player. So that lasted 12 years.
The thing of it is, though, is, all right, they just gained all this space from eliminating the DVD.
And that's how computers are getting thinner.
Why not add more? Oh, battery's life to it.
I had an old, many years ago, I think it was a Dell, doesn't matter. The point is, it had bays on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
and you could put whatever you wanted in the bays, like a DVD drive mm-hmm. or whatever.
A second battery.
One of the options was a battery, but there were two bays.
Yep.
So you could put two batteries in there, and you could go for days.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that laptop.
And the whole problem of going thinner is you also run into the risk then of overheating. You know, now there's, you got to get a cooling pad or something else, you know, to keep it cool. Whereas if you keep it a little bit thicker, you know, you gain the extra battery that you, like you say, that you could put in it. And, oh, while you're out at the coffee shop or wherever, oh, the machine actually lasts all day.
And then going back to USB-C, it's another reason USB-C caught on is that it's physically smaller, so computers can be thinner. And the Ethernet jack, they've stopped including on a lot of PCs because the computer is too thick to fit an Ethernet jack.
Too thin.
Too thin. Or there's a little door that has to open up so you can fit the Ethernet jack in.
Yeah. Well, even on that.
Do you have Ethernet? You still have A on yours. Do you have an Ethernet jack?
I do somewhere. Do I? No.
So then you have USB to Ethernet adapters.
Well, even on that handheld I just got. I mean, that comes from China.
Yeah.
And that's got a USB charger along with a little one that you can set in a cradle if you want to. But the USB is easier.
Yeah.
But right now everything comes from China.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a result of one of the EU regulations where every device must have a USB-C charging port on it.
Right.
So that we don't have to, is that mini B or micro B? You could never tell the difference between them. And then some had super B, which was a combination. And so for the next 10 years, we'll standardize on USB-C until, USB-D comes out.
Yeah.
Right. When I bought my new desktop, I bought a larger case so I could fit more fans in it.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because it's an i9 running at 4 gigahertz, and that's going to produce a little bit of heat. And I added a DVD drive. No, I added a CD drive. I don't know if that I'll ever use it. Ever. No, I added a DVD drive because I want to rip some of my DVDs to put them on my Plex server so I don't have to go find the DVD if I want to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an extra thing, and only because I bought the case, and the wide case, big enough to actually fit it.
Mm-hmm. But inside the case is a little tiny logic board?
It's a fairly small logic board. It looks like it's
a laptop logic board.
It's a fairly small logic board. I think the Radeon graphics card is bigger, bigger than the motherboard. The toughest thing, between the arthritis and the neuropathy, I've just got hams at the ends of my wrists these days. So I needed to add a second M.2 SSD card, the stick of gum looking drives. I bought it with a 1 terabyte, but the only option for the second port was a 2 terabyte. I wanted 4. So I bought the 4 terabyte. I bought the sled, which is the holder, and the heat sink. I got everything exactly right, but I couldn't put it in. I just couldn't. It was too fiddly for me, so I bribed my daughter with dinner. She came over, and between the two of us, me saying, no, it goes in here, 30-degree angle, be careful. Put it in.
You taught her well. I mean, she grew up with it.
I told her it worked like a charm. She could add PC Guru to her resume.
There you go.
But yeah, it looks like a lot of space, but there's an amazing, because it's only a mid-sized tower, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a full tower. I've got my old computer, my new computer, and in fact, I still have the computer that I was given when I left RIT 10 years ago. So there's this gigantic case, a regular size case, and now my smaller case. In a little row, going down the row, and each one is smaller but much more powerful.
Yeah,
than the one before. So, I finally got my Linux machine set up. I did not realize, and that's just I just wasn't thinking. BitLocker comes default on Windows 11 now, apparently. And it, that means that the entire home directory, the entire user directory is encrypted, which is great if you have a laptop. Not so much on a desktop, particularly if you're the only one who uses it.
Mm-hmm. And it makes having a backup even more important. No one can decrypt your data without the password, not even you.
Right. So if you lose your password,
you're
too stinking bad.
Yeah. That's so well.
So I went to put Linux on it, and it said, okay, I can't format this drive. It's got BitLocker. Okay. So I went back into Windows, because it came with Windows,
mm-hmm.
and I said, decrypt. And it just ran through it and hit 80% and then stopped dead. And I thought, yep, that's Microsoft, all right. And then Tuesday, I had to bring my, this was Tuesday morning, I had to bring my car in and for a muffler again. And then we had a bunch of other stuff that we did. And so I just didn't play much with it. I came home at night, it was still at 80%. Next morning was 80%, but I had to do a bunch of stuff again. I had lunch with a friend. I fell on the ice and bruised my coccyx.
Ouch.
So when I came home from lunch, I just went to bed. Thursday morning, I get up, it's still 80%. I thought, this is not right. There's a command line you can run that tells you how BitLocker's doing, the health of BitLocker, essentially. And it said, 100% decrypted, there is no encryption on this drive. And I looked at the progress bar, it was still at 80%. So I thought, all right.
80% of what?
Yeah. I said 80% of the heat death of the universe. So I stopped it, and then through my USB Xubuntu thing in it, and said, go turn that drive into Ubuntu. It said, yeah, not a problem. Off it went. So it probably was done Tuesday, you know, half an hour after I started.
Yeah, it was just too dumb to complete the rest of the program.
And I was too dumb to, I believed it.
Refresh the page?
No, there's no page to refresh.
See, I would have.
It was a dialog box with a mm-hmm. with a progress bar.
See, you let it go longer than I would. After an hour or so,
having to go out, having to do stuff. Yeah. You know, Wednesday was just a loss. In terms of that, I was so much pain on Wednesday.
Stuff happens.
I just went to bed. I read in bed all day long, hunched over on one side.
Well, the computer wasn't going anywhere, and you're not on any time schedule. It's not like it's your only vehicle for doing stuff.
Right. The other machine, I got the KVM switch, so I was still doing that stuff.
Yeah.
The eternal conundrum, is the progress bar stuck, or is it just taking a long time? Eventually, you give up and restart.
I just assumed it was the standard Microsoft Windows progress bar screw up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my.
They just sit there and the wheel keeps turning and turning. Or back in the day when they had the little sand, you know, hourglass.
Right.
And they
kept
turning.
I missed the hourglass with the falling sand.
Yeah, and turning and turning, and it's finally nope. Boom. Pull it. Plug. Restart.
But I have, you know, I have the old machine on KVM switch, so I could go back to the old machine. I was working fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't, you know, waiting didn't really bother me.
Oh, it bucked the ship out of me.
Yeah, I bet, but it didn't bother me. And so I waited far longer than I should have.
Well, I guess where I fall back to is over the years, too many times, Microsoft's, you know, you're doing something in the old Windows and everything else, and it get halfway through and then fail. Just like when we used to have to put in 34 different disks load the stupid operating system.
And the 33rd disk.
It failed. And you're ready to throw all of those disks right across the room. You know, it just got to where I just said, hell with it, pull the plug, start again.
Yep. Well, you forget, for the last 30 years, I've been using Linux.
Yeah.
Which progress bars matter in Linux, mm-hmm. and they're correct in Linux.
And they also work correctly.
And they work correctly. when it says 80%, it's 80%.
Mm-hmm. And they keep moving. Whereas Windows, you know, oh, all of a sudden goes to sleep or hiccups or that. Yeah. No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So the fault is mine, but it's working now, and I'm slowly moving over to it. You know, I've got life is happening to me, and I don't have, you know, 6 hours to sit down and do it right once.
It's a bitch getting old, isn't it? It's,
you know, it beats the alternative, they say.
Oh, heck yeah.
I'm not sure it does, but.
Yeah, no.
We'll see.
You know,
it's not for the faint of heart, let's just put it that way.
And especially when you fall and then you don't recover like you did when you were 20.
When I was younger, if I had fallen the way I did Wednesday, not a problem.
Yeah.
Absolutely not a problem.
Pick yourself off, dust yourself off, and away you go.
And you're on your way. The next day, you're maybe a little sore, but 2 days later, you're fine.
Yeah.
2 days later, I was in worse pain than I was the day before. So, I don't recover like I used to. Although I will say it's better today than it was certainly on Wednesday afternoon or Thursday. So, it's... But the new computer is running smoothly.
See, 70 used to be really old, and it isn't anymore.
It's not.
The closer you get to it, the less old it feels. Well, sometimes it feels, yeah.
And it still does, and I'm older than all you guys.
Yeah. Yep. And I also have, as I alluded to, I have a MacBook Pro. It's an Intel MacBook Pro, and I'm going to put Linux on that because it's running Monterey 12.7, which is, what, three versions old, which means it's not updating anymore, which means it's not secure anymore, and I don't like running an unsecured operating system, and it's an Intel Mac, and I don't know if the M123 Macs have Linux for them yet. I've never bothered to look. But I will be putting Linux on that as well. Again, simply because I don't want to run an old operating system. But enough about me, far more than enough about me. Let's head on back to the phones and talk to Bill from Greece, New York. What's up, Bill?
Hello, guys. It appears that Firefox has gone to a new terms of service. And that ties into the privacy acts. And I tried to figure it out. Looks like all it is a way for them to spy on you. Have you looked at this? Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, I don't run Firefox much, so I didn't take much of a look at it. But all of them, every device I have and every service I have is revising their terms of service these days, particularly the privacy stuff. In order to give us, I will quote them, more privacy. But from my point of view, it seems like less privacy.
They say that their third-party people are going to observe their privacy and their terms of service, and I find that hard to believe.
Well, I'm with you on that, Bill. The reality is that they're all kind of like that. I've been looking at Vivaldi recently, which is a more privacy-oriented, Chromium-based browser. So far, I like it a lot, but I've got to do more digging, more delving in.
It just kind of upset me when I started investigating it.
Yep.
It looks like it's a way for them to do more spying on you and to sell your data.
Well, that's the big thing. I was about to say it's not so much about spying on you as about selling your data so other people can spy on you.
Yeah. And now I see that you're going to put another Linux distribution on your MacBook. I'm a huge Linux distro hopper. I'm over 500 right now, but... There's a distro that I found that I recommend to my friends for new users. It's called Emma Buntis. It's a Ubuntu derivative. But Amabantus, it's for older computers. It runs the XFCE desktop, but it comes with a lot of pre-installed software. And I find when I help people with Linux, they're sitting there saying, but I need this. What do I get in Linux? And I find if I tell them to try Amabantus, in fact, they even helped me out. I said, what is this software? I opened it up. Oh, I didn't know I could do that. Amabantus works really good on old computers. It's got all your drives and everything set up for you. Everything goes automatic. But I find it's nice because it's got good pre-installed software that you may never know existed. So I just thought I'd give it out as a tip.
Nice. How do you spell that?
It's one word, B-U-E-M-M-A-B-U-N-T, umlaut, U-S.
Umlaut. Yeah, it's really nice for the people I've switched to Linux.
Excellent. Thank you. I like hearing that. Thanks.
Okay, and I am a paid subscriber. Hurrah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, have fun. Yeah, interesting. I'm personally sticking with Xubuntu. It's the one I settled on after much distro hopping of my own. And now, you know, I can set it up with the window decorations I want and the cursors I want. XFCE is the manager, and it's very fast. Although, I will say, just for the heck of it, I did put a new version, the newest version of Kubuntu, which uses KDE, which used to be the bloatiest, slowest, heaviest distribution on the market, and is now quite fast and light.
Hmm.
I was very impressed. Not enough to make it my daily driver. I'm still sticking with Xubuntu on my new desktop, but and that's what I'll be putting on my MacBook Pro. But I liked it. I liked it very much. I was very impressed. So I still have that one laptop that's doing that. I told you I have a problem. And I admit it, I don't gamble, I don't drink, and I don't womanize, but I do buy laptops. I do buy refurbished old laptops just to play with.
Well, that's the whole fun of Linux, too. Like we've said before, you can have an old machine, buy a bunch of jump drives, load various flavors of Linux, pop them in. That's the one thing of that Linux has over Windows. You can pop it in and run it. Yes, granted, it's going to be a little slow, but the other key thing that you're going to take away from it is the experience of seeing how that operating system works without having to install it. You can test drive it and actually look at the feel of it and the menu system and everything else and configure and play around with it. You don't like it? Okay. Well, you shut the thing down, put a different flavor in, and boot that up, and play around with it until you find the one that you actually want to like, and install. It lets you test drive, truly test drive. Not something, if I want Windows, I got to load the whole GD thing on there, whether I want it or not, to, see what it looks and feels like. Linux is unlike any other operating system out there.
Yeah.
That you can do that. It allows you to test drive it.
And you can test drive any distribution you like. What you'll find is that many of them are surprisingly similar.
Yeah.
That doesn't make them better or worse or whatever. They're just, you can make the real beauty of Linux. You can make it look like anything.
Yeah, Windows,
fairly
Macs,
easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something no one has ever seen before.
Yep.
It's any operating system lets you take the taskbar or the what they call in Linux the panel and the dock in Mac and move it so it doesn't have to be at the bottom. It can be at the top or the left or the right. I prefer I have two panels running simultaneously. There is the one at the top. But there's one on the left, and I put it on the left because you have more screen real estate left to right than you do top to bottom. I don't want it on the bottom. It takes up too much of my screen. Put it on the left. And then you can hide it and all of that other nonsense. But there are just a lot of really good distributions that you can play with and do all kinds of kind of amazing things with. It's pretty impressive. And I very much like playing around with it. I've settled on a look and feel that I like. I like the color green, so my desktop is green. I found a couple of very cool window decorations that I like very much that make it easy and nice to run and pretty looking. And I'm not a huge fan of all the swoopies and swirlies when you, you know, suck it down to the bar and pull it up from the bar and all that other nonsense.
But and the way the menus work and everything else, you know,
the slide out. Work.
Yeah, you can customize all those,
to your heart's content.
Yeah.
And one of the things I discovered, by the way, about Windows, it's gray. It's just really gray. And I know you can change that, but most people don't. And when you first open it up, it looks boring.
They tried that fancy, colorful Aero interface a few years ago and never caught on.
I would have loved Aero as opposed to gray. Gray is just, it's, you know, the sky outside is gray now. I don't want it on my computer, too. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nina Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour, listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call. We'll be here for another half an hour. I don't know where you'll be, but we'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hours, after hours,
yeah.
Apparently I'm thinking ahead, we are Soundbites, and we have Linda from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Linda, what's up? Linda?
Hold on a minute.
Don't talk yet. Linda hung up.
Hold on. Something happened, yeah.
Or Dave hung up on Linda.
No, I didn't.
I wouldn't do that.
I know you wouldn't. Dave is
frantically pushing buttons.
Frantically pushing buttons. See what we got. So we don't have Linda. We can.
Okay, hold on.
We'll move on, and Linda can call back if she can.
Linda, please call back, please.
Fred from Rochester.
Who?
Fred from Rochester.
Fred.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, Fred. What's up?
A while ago, you discussed preferences for social media, Mastodon, Bluetooth.
I'm sorry. Hold on. My phone is talking to me.
Okay.
I think
you said
I just
the keyword?
I think I just deleted somebody from my phone. Sorry. Go ahead.
You had a discussion about social media, your preferences. Mastodon, Blue Sky, etc. Could you reiterate those or at least update the website to show, bring that to the top?
Okay, so I personally am on four social media sites because I'm a social butterfly.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook. Eh. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Blue Sky, and I'm also on Counter Social. The in terms of who and what I see, I'm on Facebook because you kind of have to be, although it's becoming a wasteland. It's becoming not a wasteland. It's becoming cluttered with so much nonsense that I don't find it as useful as I used to. I get more engagement on Counter Social than on anything else. I get a little bit on Mastodon, and Blue Sky seems to be everybody I used to or want to follow in the world, including a bunch of authors that I follow and a bunch of personalities that I follow. They're all on Blue Sky, which seems to be where most people are jumping from Facebook.
And then Mastodon seems to be the replacement for Twitter.
Right, right, right. And so I'm on all three of those, Counter Social, Mastodon, and Blue Sky. And while I like Blue Sky and Mastodon, well, I like them for different things, right? Blue Sky, there's a bunch of people that I followed, television and radio personalities, movie people, as well as a number of friends. A number of my friends are on Mastodon, and some are on Counter Social. So I'm on all three right now. I don't know where we're all going to end up, but that's that. And that's those are the three big replacements right now for Facebook and Twitter.
Excuse me. What about Instagram?
Sorry, what?
What about Instagram?
Instagram doesn't seem to have a replacement yet that I've been happy with.
It was TikTok.
Right.
But that, you know, their legal standing is sort of up in the air. It is it's currently illegal in the US to use TikTok, and it's been removed from both Google and Apple stores. But President Trump has said he's not going to enforce that law.
Mm.
But it's still the law. They haven't repealed the law yet.
Right.
And the Supreme Court decided to not hear the appeal.
Right. So for that, I don't have a replacement yet. But for Facebook and Twitter, we do.
Okay.
So there was an interesting thing happening in eBay where if you already have TikTok on your phone, it still works. But it's not in the store, so you can't download it onto a new phone or a different phone anymore. So people were selling their phones for exorbitant prices
because
they had TikTok installed, yeah.
Supposing you can't update it as well?
No, probably not.
Probably not, because it's been removed from the stores.
Right. It will not get updates.
Okay. Somebody asked me if I wanted to follow them on Instagram, and I'm going, don't even use it.
Right, right, right. A lot of people don't. No. It was, for the longest time, tweenage influencers.
Uh-huh.
And there are some people, you know, some media types, movie stars and that, who post on it, but it's inundated with influencers of various sorts that, you know, if you're not a tween, I don't know why you're following them.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, people get Blue Sky seems to be the most serious and the most populous. It seems, you know, every day another million people join Blue Sky. Mastodon is quite popular, and Counter Social's in there in the fight. So. You know, any one of those. The idea is find the people that you want to follow and then join that service. And it doesn't hurt to be on multiple services.
Okay. Well, it was somebody that I met at the dinner, and you know, they inquired about that, and I'm like, old school, I'll pick up the phone and call you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
So, okay.
All right. Enough. Thanks, Fred. Up.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Yeah. For the limited extent I use social media, again, you know, everybody's still on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody seems to be able to just make the break.
So
even though nobody likes Facebook anymore.
So Facebook replaced MySpace almost instantly.
Yeah.
But back then when there weren't that many users on it. So everyone joins the service all their friends are on, and then if their friends are on that service, they don't want to join a different service.
Right. And changing services is hard because you know there are programs that will do that for you.
Yeah,
collect all of your users and see if they're on. There's someone similar. I mean, they don't know. I suppose if I joined Blue Sky as Joss Whedon before he did, somebody might have followed me thinking I was Joss Whedon.
Yeah. And your Joss Whedon comment made me lose my thought.
It was a brilliant comment, and I can see where it would awe you.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones while Steve tries to restart his brain. Our next caller is Don from Don or Dan?
Dan it is.
Dan. Yep. Well, we'll take Dan this time.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the show. It's great.
Thanks.
I got a problem I never thought I'd have. My camera's too good. I know you guys are pixel people. I got to upload some documents, not photographs, documents. And the site states that it's not taking them if they're over 5 megabits. So, photo. And I dumbed the camera down. It's a Pixel phone to their lowest resolution. And I'm just, a couple of them are just over the 5s. It's how can I dumb it down farther?
Okay, what format does it? It's they're JPEGs, right?
Oh, I don't have it right now. Yeah, they're talking about JPEGs, I believe. Yeah, right.
So
it is.
Basically, you'd have to go to a different program to reduce the size of the image.
Right. So okay. What you need is a program that either compresses them or just reduces the image size.
So reducing the size will lower the quality. That's part of the drawback of it.
Yeah, but it's only just like documents. It's mostly, you know.
Yeah, what operating system are you using?
It's whatever comes with my empty. I'm doing this on over the phone. I could jump over on the other on the laptop and do it. But I just thought the Pixel would be able to get a little poorer quality.
Yeah, no. Depending on the phone, you've got an awfully nice.
I'm complaining about it. It's too good.
Choked you up there.
Choked me up.
So what would you recommend, quick and dirty, to do that with? Which program?
There are a number. So I don't know of any that work well on the phone itself. Do you also have a computer?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so all of your photos should be backed up to Google Photos.
Yep.
So you could download them from Google Photos and use an image compression program. So what operating system are you running on your computer?
Chrome, I guess.
There is
it's a Chromebook?
I think I have Chrome. No. It's a Windows machine. I'm sorry. But I do have Chrome on it. It's a Windows machine.
Oh, yeah, all right. Okay. So what you want to do is an... a JPEG reducer program for Windows.
There is one for Android called Photo Compressor and Resizer.
Well, there you go.
In the Play Store. I'm posting a link to it.
I couldn't find anything that fit. I tried one out. It was junk. What do they call that on the Play Store?
Photo Compressor and Resizer.
Oh, it has got into a lot of...
4.8 stars with 55,000 reviews.
Yeah, I was into that. I didn't like that. They were getting in my wallet right away.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try that JPEG reducer over on the Windows machine.
Well, hold on a second. If you're running Windows, there's a program called Microsoft Picture Manager. I don't know if you have that, but if you do, in the Picture Tools format tab, you can click compress the picture.
Okay, it sounds real easy right up my alley.
Yeah, so and they make it real simple because your choices are for print, for web, or for email.
Okay.
And so, you know, certainly each one is smaller than the one before, so particularly for email, you should get under your 5 meg limit.
Okay. Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right. Good luck.
Finish this show up. Yep. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Yeah, I understand why people have a limit. You don't want people uploading 600 terabyte files, but it's
on the iPhone. There's a separate document scanner app that doesn't take a picture. It scans the document.
Well, that's what I've seen.
So it's not
also
as big as a photo. So photograph, you want the highest resolution you can.
I've seen a number of apps advertised, you know, for the Android phones that you can sit there and take a document. Like you said, scans it. That way you can then pass it on to somebody and do it, like you said.
It likely saves it as a JPEG.
Probably.
And then those have size issues of their own, but it's possible that it would be small enough.
But it might also be black and white as a document rather than, you know, 32-bit color.
Yeah, right. You wouldn't want anyway.
Yeah, that'll cut the size in a quarter by itself.
Right. And you're right. These days, almost every camera on any phone is an excellent quality device.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally a good thing. As Steve said, in a lot of situations, if you want to blow that picture up, you take it on your phone, it looks great, but you want to blow it up and you don't want it to be grainy, so the higher resolution is what you want.
But then trying to pass it on, that's where you hit the wall.
Yeah. Most email has about a 5 megabyte file size limit because email was designed for text. So it has to convert your picture into text at one end and deconvert it at the other end.
That's why using the email option in the program I was just talking about is probably a 5 meg limit.
Mm-hmm. And most of the photo sharing services, Google Photos, Apple iCloud Photos, they will email a link to the photo. So at the other end can download the high-res photo rather than needing to send it through the email.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you can do that as well, of course, and that may not fit Dan's situation. He may, that's different. But in Google Photos, you can copy out the link and then send that link to somebody, share it. When you go to share it, if they're in your phone book, you can just click on them and say, hey, take a look at this picture, and they get a link. Or you can say, give me the link and send it to somebody else, or put it, on a web page or wherever, whatever you want to do with it. And it's a link to only that picture, so it's not, it's not like you're going to be sending all of your photos to everybody on the planet. So that's kind of nice. There's a lot of options. What we don't do often enough is explore. We don't play enough with our computers.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of options. I'm constantly telling people, do it this way. And they go, oh, I didn't know it could do that.
Yeah.
Play around with it. Take a look. Go through. It takes 2 minutes to just go through every one of the menu choices. And just look at it.
See what your options are.
What's under file and what's under edit are probably normal. But then there'll be, other things
tools
that are different and unique to each
and
system.
And it's very hard to accidentally damage the computer. Just don't click anything that says delete or trash or erase. Because those are the things that you usually don't want to do unless you really know what you're doing.
And usually they will say, you sure you want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
Say no. Well, if you see a thing that says, are you sure you want to do this, and you aren't sure, say no.
And the other thing, too, though, is there's, on usually every program, the last tab over is a help screen or a help button.
Right.
That you can then look for various tips and tricks to use that they offer up. But very few folks go over to the help and, play around with that and find out more about it. Because there's some good, tools in there that you could maybe make things a little bit easier for you in your doing of certain tasks.
So I have a friend who calls me up. She says she's got problems with her hands as well. She said, I can't type anymore. What can I do? do I, you know, how much is Dragon, naturally speaking, and all of that? I said, well, I know you use Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried voice typing? Mm-hmm. What's voice typing? Okay, under Tools, pick voice typing. Up comes a little microphone, and you can now talk to your thing, and you know, you can say, hello, exclamation point, new paragraph. It's Dragon naturally speaking,
mm-hmm,
all by itself.
On steroids.
On steroids, and you can do that all day long, and you can go back and edit with it, and, you know, you do need to learn a whole new language.
But when your hands and that aren't working right, it's a lifesaver.
It's a lifesaver. There's a little microphone button on the Google search page, so you can click that and talk, you know, so say the search.
Yeah, most of the time anywhere that there's like a keyboard logo, there's a little microphone button next to it for dictation.
On my phone, when I go to type a text message, about 90% of the time, I don't type anymore. I just hit that talk button.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just start out with asking the operating system, and I won't try to trigger it again. I ask the operating system to send a message to someone. Mm-hmm. And it says, okay, what's the message? I tell it the message. It says, you're ready to send? I say, yes. Off it goes. I used to only use that while I was driving. Because now it's hands-free,
yep,
right? I keep my eyes on the road, et cetera, et cetera. Now I do it all the time. All the time. It just makes my life so much easier.
Yeah.
And so much faster. And again, between the arthritis and the neuropathy, these are just hams. These are just large hams on the end of my wrists. So,
tools to eat with.
Tools to eat with.
Use to eat with.
Yeah. So... take a look at the things that it will do. You know, for example, sharing documents. If you do need to download a Google Doc document to share to somebody, take a look at file download. It gives you 8 choices of what to download it as, including an EPUB, by the way. When I write a book... Now, I just write it in Google Docs and then save it as an EPUB. I am done. That used to be an 8-step process. You had to use Kindle Creator and do this and do that and do 6 things. Now it's just, okay, EPUB, I'm done. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Next, you can save it as a Microsoft Word document. I've said this many times when I was still working. I worked in the business college. So everybody used Microsoft Word except me, and nobody ever knew.
Yeah, don't need to.
For 20 years, I was either using OpenOffice or Google Docs toward the end. And so, and it'll save as an open document format, which is OpenOffice. And you can save it as rich text and PDF. You save a PDF. For decades... Everybody was complaining that, you know, how do I make a PDF out of my Word document?
Save as.
Now it's save as, but then it was, again, multiple programs and downloading and thinging and this and that.
I had to buy Acrobat Pro for $600.
Yep, to be able to save it.
Now it's here, I can just save it as a PDF document.
Google Docs has had that in there for a long time.
Forever. Along with also, as a web page, I can save... things as a web page if I want. There's just so much you can do with these things that we never look at. You can email a file to people right out of the thing. I email the link to you guys every week, but I don't email the document because I don't need to.
Yeah. Open the caller's document. I'm Anonymous Ferret. So, there are anonymous animals.
Yeah, there are several people looking at the
caller log because you have caller log on the Soundbites front page.
Yep. But see, I've got all you. Right,
yeah, I'm logged in as me, and Anonymous Ferret is me in a private window, not logged into my Google account.
I beg your pardon.
Yeah,
I don't know who the other.
I don't know
is.
Who Anonymous Turtle is, but I'm Anonymous Ferret.
Yeah, okay.
There was Snow Leopard in there a minute ago.
Yep.
So they can see the caller logs.
Right.
Which I also put in the podcast download too.
Right, that's how they got to it. I don't I'm allowing people to look at it, so that's
yep.
That's kind of nice.
I wonder how many animals I can be.
I've seen things where there were 15, 20
mm-hmm.
different animals in there, and there's a whole list of them somewhere, and I don't know where they are.
Yeah, I found it on Google. Ooh, now I'm a badger.
Ooh, ah. Kind of look like an alien.
Yeah, it does.
More than a badger. But yeah. So when you've got a minute, take a look at the various programs that you use, and take a look at the really kind of amazing things you can do with them that you don't think you can do with them because you haven't really looked through the choices. I'm pretty impressed by some of the features that I've found in programs that you used to have to pay for and now are free. And that goes along, of course, with free programs like the GIMP and OpenOffice and stuff like that. All right. That music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. Good questions this week. I want to thank everybody who didn't call in for listening anyway. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank myself, Nick Francesco. And as I said, I want to thank you. We are done for this week. But you know what? We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. And that's right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And if I can just take a second. Member-supported is not just lip service on this station. We get our support from you, and we thank you so much. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another.